Welcome to the show, Be Convinced, where I share life-changing stories of hope with you so that you can get a big dose of hope in just 30 minutes. I'm your host, Soraya Diassi-Kofelt. I'm an Ivy League educated lawyer, a former judge, small business owner, children's author, wife, and mother who's passionate about helping to improve your life and convincing you that there is indeed hope for a better future for ourselves and our children. Because of my diverse education and life experiences, I'm able to bring to you a wide variety of guests, from children to millennials to senior citizens, all of whom share their heartfelt, life-changing stories of hope to inspire and motivate you. In each story, we share thought-provoking concepts, some of which you may want to incorporate into your own life, as well as resources for you to consider, all to inspire and motivate you to be hopeful. Mother Teresa once said that one person alone cannot change the world, but one person can cast a stone across the water to create many ripples. I would like my podcast to do just that, create many ripples through many lives, including yours, as we hope for and achieve better. Please subscribe to my podcast on your favorite podcast platform. It's easy, just click a button and it's free, and you'll be able to get all my new episodes to keep you encouraged and filled with hope. This is episode number 120. According to recent statistics, over 70,000 drug overdose deaths occur in the U.S. every year, with the percentage increasing at an annual rate of 4%. That equals to 190 persons dying each day from a drug overdose. And what a shocking statistic that is. As drugs become more and more accessible, the number of addicts has increased dramatically. And not only is the person who is taking drugs affected by drug use, but also the addict's family. How can families deal with their loved ones who are addicts? My guest, Candace Platter, has been a family addictions counselor and therapist for many years and was an addict herself. She shares her story of becoming addicted to various drugs prescribed by her doctors after she was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. After abusing drugs for 15 years, she became suicidal and finally reached her bottom. Only then did she reach out for help. She knows all too well the challenges and sufferings of an addict, and she profoundly believes that families are key to helping the addict overcome any addiction. Candace is also the author of the book titled Loving an Addict, Loving Yourself, 10 Survival Tips for Loving Someone with an Addiction. We talk about why she wrote it and how it can help families. Please stay tuned. My passion has always been to spread the love of books and promote the importance of literacy in a child's life. My passion inspired me to write a series of 5 faith-based children's books about our favorite holidays from a Christian's perspective: Easter, 4th of July, Halloween, Thanksgiving, and Christmas. My books are filled with colorful illustrations and lots of humor because children love to laugh. All proceeds from book sales go to the nonprofit foundation as the Stars of the Sky Foundation to help promote literacy. To purchase my books, please visit asthestarsofthesky.org or your favorite online bookseller. Thank you. Hi, thank you again for joining us on another episode of Be Convinced, where we share life-changing stories of hope. And as you know from the introduction, my guest is Candace Platter, and I'm so happy to have Candace with us. But before we begin the interview and we learn all about her and all that she offers and about her book and many other things about her, I would like to share a quote, and it's a very simple quote, and it's actually from Candace herself. And the quote is, "If nothing changes, nothing changes." So welcome, Candace. It's so nice to have you, and a very interesting quote, and we're going to be talking about that. And you're a family, we'll talk about it, but you're a family addictions counselor and therapist, as well as an author. And why I say we'll talk about it later is this word, why you think it's so important to have family involved with addictions counseling and therapy. So tell us, it's really important, I think, for the listening audience to know about your background, because you went through some serious addictions yourself.
Yes, I did. I just want to say hi, everyone.
Yes. Thank you.
You know, the relevant I guess part of my story starts in the early 70s when I suddenly became very ill. I thought I had food poisoning. I thought I'd get better. I didn't have food poisoning and I didn't get better, not for a very long time. And I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease finally. But at that point, the doctors really didn't know much about Crohn's disease. It was a new disease for them. They misdiagnosed me for a while. They gave me wrong medication. But a lot of what they gave me, because they didn't know what else to do with me, in their defense at that time,
yes,
they gave me a lot of medication. They just threw a lot of prescriptions at me. And they were medications for things like Valium, you know, the benzodiazepine family, and also a lot of opioids. So I had as much codeine and Demerol and Oxycontin and morphine as I wanted.
Mm-hmm. And this is in the 1970s.
This is in the 1970s. You know, the addiction wasn't on the radar at that time, and I really feel like I want to defend the doctors at that time. Unfortunately, this is still happening today.
Yes.
Where doctors are prescribed these medications that can be very dangerous for people, and they know better. You know, that's a bugaboo for me. It's a pet peeve. Anybody's body would develop an addiction to these substances, especially as much as I was taking. And I also liked the feeling. It took all the shame away, all the pain away. I didn't have to think about things, and I was just kind of stoned all the time. You know, I got to a point in my life, because that can't last very long. I was basically an opioid addict for 15 years without even knowing it.
Yes.
I didn't know what was going on for me. I just knew that something was very wrong with this picture of my life. I got to a place of being suicidal. I really didn't know if I wanted to live anymore. And I had a plan. I had enough pills. I had the opportunity. You know, I could do it and nobody would find me in time. I scared myself. So I had a choice to make. Was I going to live? Was I going to not live? And if I was going to live, then I had to learn how to do things a different way. And that's what I chose. I remember the night I had a bottle of pills in one hand and I had my phone in the other hand. I'm in Vancouver, Canada. I called the Vancouver Crisis Center, and somebody on the other end of the line saved my life just by respecting me and talking to me and listening to me. And I got help from there and made a decision to change my life. And that's what I've done. But it hasn't been easy. And it's been quite a long process. I'm 35 years clean and sober now.
Yes. Congratulations. What a journey you've had, how difficult it was. And where did you get your quote? If nothing changes, nothing changes.
You know, I wish I could say that I thought it up, but it's from somebody else, and I don't know who. I think it's one of those anonymous quotes that floats around.
Yes.
And I remember seeing it and thinking, my God, this is brilliant. It's like five words, and it's brilliant. And it just says so much. The other way to say that saying is that if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always gotten.
Yes. Yeah, so true.
You know,
so true.
There's just no other way to, if you're not going to change something, it's going to stay the same. And
so your journey
get worse.
Yes. Yeah. So your journey to recovery, you said it's been 35 years. So tell us about that journey. And you have yourself become an addictions counselor and therapist.
Yes. Yes. Here in Vancouver, we need to have 3 years clean and sober before we can work in the addictions field, which I think is a brilliant idea because, you know, for the first 3 years, you kind of don't even know what your name is when you're recovering from addiction. So when I was 3 years clean, I decided that I wanted to work in the addiction field. I had been a teacher. I had been a counselor in a different way before, but I wanted to work in the addiction field because I wanted to give back some of what I had been given. And so I looked for a job and I was offered a job in Vancouver's downtown east side, which is the poorest area, lowest income area in Canada. It's a skid row kind of place. And
yes,
many of Canada's addicts, alcoholics, homeless, people with mental health conditions congregate there and live there. And we've had a tremendous overdose problem there. I've got a job as an addictions counselor in a nonprofit organization, wonderful place. And I stayed there for 16 years, which is a really long time to be there. It's a hard place to be. It's a hard...
Certainly.
I feel like I got an education that I couldn't have gotten anywhere else. I can work with any issue. I don't always want to, but I can. I know how to, you know.
Tell us, Candace, you've had this really extraordinary journey and you were 15 years, you said. Was it 15 or 16 years? I'm sorry.
15 years as an addict. 16 years in the downtown East Side working with the addicts and alcoholics there.
Yes. And then you went into private practice.
Well, what happened, there's a step before that. What happened when I was in the downtown East Side was that I started to get calls from the family members of the clients that I was seeing. I didn't seek this out. It came to me. They called me. Many of them, they kept calling me saying, we're at our wit's end. We don't know what to do. We love them. We hate them. We don't know what to do with them, you know?
Yeah.
And so I started to see them and hear their stories and see their patterns of enabling and enmeshment and things that they were doing that were helping the addict stay stuck.
Yes. Yes.
More than anything else. So I found two things. One, I loved working with the family members. And the other is that there was a huge gap in service. There was very little for these people. There was a lot of help out there for the addicts, the alcoholics, anybody struggling with that. But for their family members, hardly anything at all. And so I made a decision that I was going to do that work because it was really needed.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's when I went into private practice.
Okay. Yeah. And that's why you're a family addictions counselor and therapist. So why do you think the family is so important? You mentioned about their enabling and all the things that a family member, members may be doing. But why not just concentrate primarily on the recovering addict, him or herself?
That's such a great question because if the addict is in a situation where there's family dysfunction and people are doing things that they shouldn't be doing, they don't know any better. And I really want to say that. Like, it's totally understandable that families enable addicts.
Yes.
Because they love them so much and they don't know what to do. But if that's happening, an enabled addict does not recover. Because really, why should they? If everything is being done for them, if they're being given money, if they're allowed to live in the family home, if they're allowed to punch holes in the walls, if they're allowed to get away with really bad behavior, why should they do anything different? And the other thing about the family is that everybody in the family, addicts and their loved ones, are affected by addiction. And everybody needs to heal. And if we just focus on the addict, the addict doesn't recover in the same way that they do when the family is involved. What the family needs to be able to do is get to a place of saying to the addict, we love you. We love you so much. And because we love you, we're not willing to support you in your addiction anymore. We don't want that life for you. It tears us apart to see you doing it. So we will no longer support you in addiction. We will support your recovery. So when you're ready, you can come to us and tell us that you want help and we will be there. But we don't want to do this anymore because it's so hard for us and because we love you, want a better life for you. That's the message.
Yes, and that's a very important one. I wanted to go back a bit. You do have a master's degree in counseling psychology. So why don't you mention that? Because I think it's really important that you have the education as well as the personal experience and then, of course, the professional experience.
Yes, I got my master's when I was close to 50. I'd been in the field for a long time. And at that point, it was pointed out to me by somebody, a colleague of mine, that I was one of the few people, at least in Vancouver, I was one of the few people that had a master's degree and the personal experience with addiction and recovery. That was very interesting. I knew that more doors would open for me if I got my degree, so I did that. I feel like I could work with it or without it and do the same work that I'm doing. But,
yes.
You know, that's the way it is. So that's it the is. Way it is.
Yeah. Yes, of course. And a degree, I feel, is very important. Mm-hmm. So you did write a book, and the title is Loving an Addict, Loving Yourself, 10 Survival Tips for Loving Someone with an Addiction. And it's won many awards. So tell us, why did you write the book, Candace?
I wrote the book because I got to a point where, you know, in working with the families, I knew I was onto something because the families that I was working with were starting to recover. The addicts were recovering. People were changing. It was amazing to see. And so I knew that there was addiction happening in families everywhere in the world.
Yes.
And that I, as one person, would not be able to work with all of them. So I thought I would write a book. So I had never written a book before. I didn't know how to write a book. But I just kind of sat down and started writing. And it's almost as if it wrote itself. Like I knew,
yes.
I knew a lot. I had a lot to share, a lot of things that work. The way that I work with addiction is very different than the way most people work with addiction. The 12-step model is what most people are continuing to work with. The 12-step model is Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous and Gamblers Anonymous and Al-Anon and all of those. They have basically the same 12 steps and the same philosophy,
yes.
Which is that addiction is a medical disease. It's kind of called the medical model. It's a medical disease. You're powerless over this disease. It's always going to be there. You're going to relapse because that's just part of recovery because, you know, see, and I just don't believe any of that. So I have a medical disease. I have Crohn's disease. I'm coming up to like 50 years of having Crohn's disease.
Yes.
And I can't get rid of Crohn's disease.
Yes.
I'm a lot better, but I can't stop having it. It's nobody knows how to cure it yet.
Yes.
But an addiction is a very different thing from Crohn's or cancer, diabetes, or, you know, any of those kinds of medical diseases. And I also know that we're not powerless over this. I'm not powerless over this. I made a choice to stop using.
Now, yes.
That wasn't an easy choice. And I had to make that choice every single day consciously, every minute, every nanosecond for
yes.
a while.
Yes.
In order to stay clean. But I kept making that choice and just putting one foot in front of the other. And I have not relapsed in 35 years, even
yes.
though I have needed medication at times. I've been accountable. I've been transparent and upfront about that when I needed to do that for the Crohn's. But I haven't relapsed. I haven't taken in 35 years. I have not taken any substance in order to get high.
Yes.
Which is
yes.
what I consider to be a relapse. So I work with people in terms of this is a choice. I don't think any person has chosen to become an addict. I don't think anybody says, great, let's be an addict. You know, that's not what they do. But the substances or the behaviors are so consuming. They're so all consuming. And they're a way of dealing with reality so that you don't really have to deal with reality. And sometimes people choose to do that for a long period
yes.
of time.
Yes.
So the choice is to face reality as it is and learn how to do that without having to numb yourself, without having to stuff it all down. And as soon as we make the choice to not use, as soon as we understand that life is going to be horrible for us if we continue to use, it's just going to get worse. When we make that choice, then we can start to recover. And if the family is also saying to us, we've had it, we're not going to do this with you anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's coming from a place of love. It's not a punishment, but we don't want you to do this anymore.
Yes,
so
yes.
Those two components of making the choice and have the family support you in that choice, that's the way people recover from addiction.
And your book talks about 10 survival tips for the family and loving someone who is still in addiction. You work with families around these 10 survival tips.
Yes.
How successful
yes.
have you been?
Well, I don't have statistics, but I'd say I've probably about, here's what I'll do. Instead of giving you a statistic, what I'll say is that when a family comes to me and they are ready to make changes,
yes,
I am 100% successful with them.
Yes.
When a family comes and says, we know we're enabling, but we don't know how to set the boundaries. We don't want to set the boundaries. We, you know, and they're waffling back and forth and they're not ready for the help, then it's not going to work. And sometimes that's happened where I've had families come and say that and they're not quite ready. And I hear from them again a year later. And then they're ready. Because the addicts are still using, everything is the same except it's worse.
Yes.
And so when that happens, when they come back and there's a commitment to being healthy, to living in a way that supports health and wellness and not addiction, then I'm totally successful.
Yes, so, yes.
Because we're working together. We're a team. I can't do it without them. And at the beginning, they find it hard to do it without me.
Does the family have to bring in the addict?
No.
You don't? Okay.
Usually I start working with the family, not with the addict. I work with whoever comes to me every once in a while. We get an addict who says, I'm done and I really need help. And that's wonderful. But most of the time it's the family that's really at the end of their rope and they come. What we do at Love with Boundaries, that's my company, Love with Boundaries, because we need to love our addicts and we need to love them with boundaries that are healthy and self-respecting. So what we do is we help the family get the addict ready for us to work with them.
Yes. So tell us, you have a wonderful website. It's lovewithboundaries.com. And you have your book, and the title again is Loving an Addict, Loving Yourself, 10 Survival Tips for Loving Someone with Addiction. So you have your book. What other items do you have available?
Well, the book is in several forms, including an audiobook, which I'm reading. So that's one thing. I have the workbook. There's a workbook that goes along with it called Loving an Addict. The workbook, very creatively titled. I've done a TEDx talk about this, about families and addiction. And if anybody's listening who's in this situation, I really hope that you'll take a listen to my TEDx talk. It's 15 minutes long. You'll get the gist of it right away. So I have that. I have so many things. I'm just trying to have an Ask Candace column where people can write in with their questions.
Yes.
I don't know what to do. My addict keeps banging on the door at 2 o'clock in the morning. What do I do? And I'll answer that question. So we have that. We do a self-respect Sunday. Every Sunday morning, if you're signed up for my newsletter, it comes into your inbox and it's some kind of a beautiful photo. And then it'll have a quote from my book. So it'll be about setting boundaries, about having self-respect, about taking care of yourself, you know, about those kinds of things, just a short quote. So there's a lot. There's a lot. If you want to sign up for my newsletter, just go to the website. You get a free chapter of my book, my favorite chapter of my book. You'll see all the various things that we have.
Yes. And you're serving a group of people that often are neglected, which are the families. I know as a former judge, I dealt a lot with addicts, whether I was in the family court or I was in the regular adult court. And it's very, very hard. Often we sent them away, we meaning the court system or the justice system would send them away for treatment and they would successfully complete treatment and come back to their home environment. And then within a few months, they were back as addicts. And it was very, very upsetting to me as a judge.
You know, it doesn't even usually take a few months. It doesn't take long at all because the addict goes to treatment. I was in treatment as well, detox and treatment. And if we go there and we make some really good changes, we work really hard, we make the changes, you know, we get on a good path. And then we come back to a family that's going to enable us.
Yes.
That's going to let us get away with horrible behavior. We're going to fall back into those manipulative behaviors. You know, we're not going to respect the family that's doing that with us because we know they shouldn't be. Then the relapse happens. There's a different word for relapse. It's called a slip. And I think that word actually minimizes what happens, but it's an acronym. And SLIP, you know, people say, oh, I slipped, right?
Yes.
SLIP stands for sobriety loses its priority.
Yes.
SLIP. And yes. When the addict comes back into a home, a family situation where the dynamics are still dysfunctional because nobody's been working with the family, they don't know what to change, they don't know that they should be changing, addiction comes back. That's just how that works.
Yes, yes, so
this
definitely.
This is why I work with the family. I usually won't work with an addict without working with the family. It has to be a specific situation for me to do that because it just doesn't work the same way.
Even if the addict is an adult and lives outside.
If the addict is an adult and lives outside the home and reaches out to us and says,
yes.
I am ready. My yes. family doesn't want to come for counseling, but I am ready. This is actually what happened to me, is that I was ready. My family wouldn't have anything to do with it.
Yes, yes.
And I think that's why I really like working with families, because, you know, my family was so disjointed and dysfunctional. That when I see families healing, it's a wonderful thing for me. But yes, if an addict is in that position, I want help, my family doesn't, I will work with them for sure.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Candace. We've reached the end of the podcast and time just flew by. You have so much information to share with us, but I would just ask the listening audience to please go to her website, lovewithboundaries.com, and they can purchase your book on any online bookseller.
Yep, Amazon or Barnes and Noble, Chapters, whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah. Thanks again, Candace.
Thank
Have a
you.
Wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Thank you for joining me on my show, Be Convinced, as we share with you life-changing stories of hope. Please visit my Facebook page, Be Convinced VI, and like and follow me. I post weekly about upcoming radio shows and podcasts. Please also visit my website at SorayaDiasiCofelt.com, where you will be able to read more about me and access my podcasts, which are all designed to give you a big dose of hope in just 30 minutes. Let's contemplate on what the great Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. once said. Use me, God. Show me how to take who I am, who I want to be, and what I can do, and use it for a greater purpose than myself.